Wessex LMCs, supporting you and your practice.
Hello and welcome to another Wessex LMCs podcast with me, Dr. Laura Edwards, a GP and one of the joint CEOs of Wessex LMCs. And I'm joined today by Dr. Katie Warburton and Dr. Jo Hunter. Welcome, both of you.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having us, Laura.
You're very welcome. Now, you've come to talk to us about something that was really interesting. So you approached us and said, this is what we are doing. And we thought it'd be really interesting to have a conversation with you, as it's something quite different. So you are very much on the pulse of what is important at the moment to the health system, I would say, in that you are both health inequality fellows. So do you want to introduce yourselves and tell us what you've been doing in that line of work? Should we start with you, Katie? Would you like to tell us about yourself?
Yes. I'm Katie. I'm a GP retainer in Andover. And at the moment, I'm doing a fellowship, like, as you say, in health inequalities, which is through the Thames Valley and Wessex primary care school. I have been doing some general learning about health inequalities, and also have reached some conclusions, which I'll come to in a minute once Jo's had a chance to introduce herself, if that's okay.
Of course. So Jo, would you like to tell us about yourself?
Thanks. Yeah, super to be here. Thanks very much, Laura. My name's Jo Hunter. I'm a salary GP in Salisbury. And like Katie, I am a primary care fellow at the Thames Valley and Wessex Deanery. So this is a medical education fellowship, but with a health inequalities slant, which has been really, really interesting. We're about halfway through now. So we're starting to form some ideas, and we'd love to talk to you about them today.
Fantastic. And just to start right at the beginning, can one of you offer me a definition of what health inequalities is? Because it's a phrase that gets bandied about all the time. And I think it's one of those things that's just worth unpacking so we all know what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. So a good definition that's nice and brief, which obviously doesn't quite encompass everything, but is that health inequalities are the differences that exist in health outcomes between different groups. And that may be different groups geographically, it may be different groups because of certain characteristics or demographics.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so tell me a little bit more about kind of how things have gone. You're halfway through. So what have you learned so far, and what are you kind of thinking of doing in your fellowship?
So this is obviously a hugely broad subject to be looking at, and we've had the luxury of time to look into it. I started off by doing a literature search, looking at barriers people face in accessing primary care. And I've also had lots of conversations, both within the health inequalities team at the council, and with the third sector, and with people who are experiencing health inequalities, and basically asking, being really nosy and saying, you know, what do you think? What's stopping people from accessing the care that they need? What can we do differently? What can GPs realistically do differently? And I was expecting people to come out with sort of specific practical interventions that we can do. Not at all. The overarching theme has been that people just want to be treated with kindness. Words related to that come out, things like compassion, relationship, empathy, trust, respect. And there's a big overlap here, I think, with continuity of care. And it's being shown this by all members of the primary care team, by the GP, but also anyone that people come across. Katie, do you want to talk about how you, because we started off very separately and have sort of reached this conclusion sort of separately and now working together. Katie, do you want to outline how you reached here?
Yeah, sure. So, slightly different to Jo's experience. I came into this fellowship having been working in primary care mental health, and in that work had come across huge numbers of patients who were really significantly impacted by trauma and had experienced multiple adverse childhood experiences. And so I started looking a bit more into the link between ACEs and health inequalities. I found it's been well documented that really the areas where there's increased increased prevalence of ACEs, there's also increased instance of health inequality. And that's sort of Michael Marmot has written about that quite extensively. And so I started thinking, well, how can we therefore work towards improving experience for those affected by health inequalities from the angle of looking at people's childhood experiences and their trauma background. So I've looked quite a bit about trauma-informed care and the sort of the pillars around how we might be able to provide that care. And in looking at those, kindness really is at the centre of all of those ways of caring for somebody. So I got to it in that slightly more kind of theoretical way, whereas Joe was in that really lovely practical way. And so we decided to sort of join together to look into things a bit more. And we came across some really fantastic work that's going on internationally, in fact, about, you know, kind of real generation of a movement for kindness in healthcare, and came across particularly a clinician called Dr. Bob Klaber, who's a paediatrician in London, who's set up these international monthly meetings where different aspects of kindness in healthcare are discussed. So that's been a real inspiration for both of us.
Oh, fantastic. So I don't know whether we just want to pause, and you talked about trauma-informed care, which again is another little phrase that I keep hearing kind of buzz past. We're all practicing this, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm not sure all of us know what that actually means. Even if we intend to do it, we're not, yeah, what is it? Would you be able to just explain that for us a little bit, Katie? What does trauma-informed care mean?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't profess to be an expert in it, but certainly it's a real area of interest of mine. Really, it's a bit like sort of Joe spoke about seeing the person as a person who's sitting in front of you, but it's seeing a person who comes to you in a healthcare situation, having a conversation with them that really recognises that there's more to it than what they're presenting with. That's a very basic way of saying it, I think, but there's different areas that are talked about. So talking about validation of people's feelings, really attentive listening, engagement with a person in a non-judgmental manner, showing that person, communicating to them that you believe in their experience, you believe in their strength for having got through the experiences that they've gone through, and that they can go through, you know, can move forward from this point and feel differently in the future. There's a lot around creating conditions where we can empower people to take supported but positive and independent action to improve their situation and their own health. And really importantly, there's also the aspect of creating emotional and physical safety. So for the patient, and to be open and ask them what is it that's needed for you to feel safe in this situation so that we can create a trusted relationship and move forward with their care. So there's lots of different aspects, but hopefully that's
that's an introduction for those who are not familiar with trauma-informed care. So you said kindness was a central pillar to that, and you've both landed on kindness as a way of helping with health inequality. So can we unpack what is meant by kindness? Is there an agreed definition of kindness?
No, there's not. But it's a word, and maybe we have a definition that we like to use. So it's a word that comes with a lot of baggage, I think, and it's really helpful to think about what it is and what it isn't. If you look back at the root of the word, it comes from the same root as kin, and as being kind, as in of a kind of someone else. So it comes with thoughts about seeing other people as a human, so and seeing that connection between you. I think the kin part is interesting because it doesn't mean kin as in this group of people are like me and this group of people aren't like me. It's seeing beyond whatever challenging behaviours may well be happening, to see the person underneath what's going on in their lives. And it's closely allied, I think, as I've said, with words like compassion and empathy. But it's different. It's about human connection, and it's a two way process. So it's not transactional, it's not just an act. So it's not just I'm going to hold a door open for you because I'm being kind. It's about seeing the person themselves.
Mm.
That was a very long definition, sorry.
No, that's good. And it's one of those things, we kind of know it, don't we, when we see it, but it's really difficult sometimes to articulate, as you say, in a kind of definition. I was trying to challenge my kids to come up with definitions of things. It's really hard. But we do all need to do that. Otherwise, we can all talk about something and have a slightly different answer in ourselves of what we're saying. So Katie, did you want to answer that and say what it isn't, or was that covered by Joe?
Yeah, no, I can add to that. I think as well, I suppose just to add to what Joe said, that within studies that have been looked at to do with kindness in healthcare specifically, there have been different areas that have been identified. So which specifically focus on deep listening and clear empathy and timely care. So, amongst other things. So that sort of just extends slightly the definition into healthcare more specifically. Mm-hmm. I think it's quite interesting to think about the difference between being kind and being nice, because sometimes the two are also confused. Mm-hmm. And we've spent some time looking at various sort of documents and writing about this, and it seems to be that being kind is really an other-centered behavior pattern. So it acts in the best interest of other people. And it is something that can require courage, but does support growth in the people around you that you're being kind to. Whereas niceness is considered to be more of a self-centered behavior pattern, which leads us to act in a pleasing manner. It's not sort of consciously self-centered, but it's we act in a way that will make people like us. And in a sort of perhaps leadership or professional setting, it can be the easy way out, really, compared to kindness, because you might use niceness as a way to avoid engaging with the difficult things, which actually kindness, it's really important that we make it clear that it's not shying away from difficult conversations. It's not, giving patients whatever they want in a consultation. It's not highlighting that error or mistake. But it's approaching those conversations or situations in a generous or human and humane way.
That is really interesting, actually. There's something there, as you say, kind of niceness is being walked all over in some ways, whereas kindness is actually being brave, and sometimes the way you say something could still be really difficult, that you actually are saying no, but it's the way that you are saying that could be quite different.
You can still hold people to account and do it in a kind way.
So I guess I'm listening to that, and I'm a big fan of deep listening. And I think, again, I've heard many things around the power of listening. And I think, again, you recognize whenever you do any kind of training around communication skills, you recognize that as GPs, we know so much around it, because we are so skilled at all of that stuff, in the way that we are kind of like, we're asked to do communication skill on steroids, aren't we? And that we are asked to meet people potentially for the very first time, connect with them. And I remember, things that I found almost impossible socially before I qualified as a doctor, be able within 30 seconds to talk to somebody in massive detail about exactly how they poo. Like, that is something that we would be expected to do, isn't it, on a daily basis? And you're both smiling because it really is something that we're expected to do. And yet most people would find that incredibly socially awkward. And yet we are experts at hopefully anyway, making people feel at ease and being able to share that, have that conversation with us. So we are awesome at that. And again, listening, again, I think we would all say patients place huge value on being examined and the laying of hands. And yet actually, if you talk to doctors about what's the most important, it's what patients say, isn't it, for 90% of our consultations. It's what they say, what words they're using, how they're describing things that we use. And all of that, and I think a lot of what you're describing about kindness requires time. And time is our biggest challenge at the moment. It's the thing that I think most GPs would lament about, is what they don't have to do their job properly. And it causes them, again, another concept of moral injury, this whole concept of crossing their own values of how they like to behave. So I love hearing your message around kindness and that being something, again, that can help us be better. But how do you square that with the current pressures that we're under as a profession?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right to raise that, Laura. And that was sort of the challenge that we expected, really, from people generally when we're, you know, starting to talk about these things. I think we're certainly not naive that that this goes beyond the individual, you know, in the consultation room. And we have started to think about kindness at three different levels. So there's the individual interaction with the doctor or practitioner, with the patient. Then there's the team level where, you know, from what we're talking about at the moment, you know, within the practice or larger group. And then there's the system level. We understand that it's difficult, and it's, you know, we're not pretending that it's not, but there is lots of research out there that actually this doesn't have to take time, a lot of time. You know, there was a research study that showed that 40 seconds of showing compassion to a person, I think it was in a oncology clinic, changed patient outcomes, the cancer patient outcomes.
And actually, it's things like calling people by their name and offering them a hand when they get up from the couch. These things actually don't take time. So I would dispute that. I don't think it does take time to be kind. And kindness has been shown to lead to better outcomes and more efficient care as well. So actually, I would totally disagree. I think kindness is a tool by which we can become more efficient and give better care. I don't think it needs to be an extra thing or feel like, you know, it's going to take a lot more time to do, because you're absolutely right. The last thing GPs need at the moment is to be told, oh, and now you need to be more kind, because it's really insulting, isn't it? We're doing it a lot. I think we need more support to do it, particularly in difficult situations. And that's where we come back to the system and looking at the system that people are working in, looking at how psychologically safe they are at work, looking whether they're able to be flexible, whether they feel supported in their team. And it works both ways.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting. Sorry, Laura. I think also interesting to note that studies have also shown that despite people's perhaps concerned that by being kind, it might encourage people to spend more time or consult more often, the studies actually show that it reduces demand on services rather than increases it. Yeah. Because patients will generally go away more satisfied that they've had a, you know, an interaction that has served their needs, and won't feel the need to keep representing in the same way.
And there's a big link here with continuity of care. So if you're seeing the same person a number of times, you build up a little patchwork of their lives, don't you? You understand who they are as a person. You've got that kinship with them. You understand. And continuity of care absolutely improves outcomes. And it is more, you know, recent research has shown, I think last couple of weeks, that it improves efficiencies as well. So yeah, I would. Yeah, that's my position. That's our position.
Okay, so what would you like to see practices doing if someone's listening to this and they're thinking, okay, I get this, there's some lovely things in there. Again, I think for the vast majority of GPs out there, this will speak directly to their hearts of things they would like to live by. And if you're challenging them and saying, are you doing this already? What could they be aiming for? What do you think they should take back to their practice and say, are we doing this? Am I doing this? Are we doing this? What should they be doing?
I mean, I think there's lots of things that can be suggested, and that can range, you know, across these three layers that we've been talking about. Part of it is what, you know, it is about being kind to each other. So within practice teams, you know, are we supporting each other? Are we, you know, seeing if someone else wants a cup of tea when you're getting one, or are we asking someone how their day was, or even at the beginning of the day, you know, how was your weekend? You know, even just those really basic sort of non-work related acts of kindness will have ripple effects to improve things for everyone. And then people will feel more able to give kindness to their patients as well. So that's on a sort of a really basic level, but Jo, do you want to?
I think at the individual level, I think thinking about trauma-informed care and thinking about how that can influence our own, the clinical work we do, there's lots of e-learning that GPs can do if they're interested. I think also thinking about leadership within the team that doctors are working in, and just little things like in practice meetings, reframing questions, asking, you know, who doesn't agree with me here, you know, rather than who agrees, just you want encouraging dissent and encouraging challenge, and making people feel like it's okay to disagree. In Herbic, the Phyllis organization by Amy Edmondson, she talks about how people working in a team will be more able to share mistakes and share things that go wrong if they feel safe and are being actively encouraged to do so. So reframing those kind of conversations is pretty important as well.
I think there's also something around training and role modeling for our medical students and trainees, and that, you know, if we can make a choice to be kind and to role model that and to show that to the next generation of healthcare professionals that are coming through, and we can choose to prioritize that within the way that we teach our students and our trainees, you know, as well as general communication skills, we can bring this in as a really important factor which can improve patient care and patient outcomes.
So any advice at all about how to approach consultations?
Yeah, I think it's really important that we don't see kindness as an added extra thing that you have to do that takes up more time in a consultation. Kindness should be the basis. And if we start with kindness, the rest should follow.
Okay. And if you've got a difficult patient who doesn't respond to your kindness initially, certainly.
Well, I think firstly, remembering that, as we said, kindness isn't being nice. So you don't have to, being kind doesn't mean just doing everything the patient says and making them happy at all. It can be something completely different to that, but it's about trying to see the person behind whatever very difficult situation they might be going through. And that's where taking a trauma-informed approach can be really helpful. Is there anything else, Katie, that you'd like to?
I think it's really important that we add that we do completely recognise that in order to treat patients with kindness and lead with kindness, that we do also need to seek to be kind to ourselves as well. And so within practices, that is something that could be facilitated as well. And how each practice would do that obviously would vary completely, but there's a lot of good evidence for kind of reflective practice in groups, or, you know, balanced style group reflection. And I think if people could perhaps look at how that could be brought in, for example, into practice meetings or, you know, middle of the day or something, that would be of real benefit to the wider team.
Some really good points there, and I think, you know, from an LMC perspective, I'm sitting here listening and thinking we need to challenge across the system, because again, one of the things I'm hearing is that as everybody's getting more tense and the workload's going up, that we're getting tense interfaces as well, and that as colleagues we are between organisations in particular and are not treating each other necessarily with kindness. And again, it's like a toxic load, isn't it? Once it hits you, then you tend to kind of pass it on, and it becomes infectious, doesn't it, that someone's been unpleasant, you become unpleasant. And I guess we will see that also with patients as well. Again, I'd say a lot of people are suffering with patients being unpleasant, which then affects our future interactions. So I think all of that I would pull together and say, for me, and I will disagree with you slightly, Jo, that I think if you have time in your day, then actually you can recover from these things a lot more. And also, I think your natural inclination is to be kind. And if you have time, then you kind of give that kindness a little bit more generously. And there's a research experiment that was done, I think, at Harvard with some theology students who were in one scenario put under time pressure and in another scenario not put under time pressure. And they were put into a scenario where it was effectively the kind of Good Samaritan situation, and they saw how they reacted, and those put under time pressure did not stop to help the injured person nearly as much as the fellow theology students who were not put under the time pressure. So it showed the same, you know, groups of people reacted in different ways depending on whether they were put under time pressure or not. And I think lots of us are under that. And again, we there's that whole concept of the boiling frogs. The temperature's gone up so much, we don't realise now how crazy the world is we operate in. So as an LMC, we're saying to people, and again, BMA is saying this nationally, choose the speed of your hamster wheel. We are going so crazy fast at the moment that things aren't great. They aren't safe necessarily. And actually you need to stop and say, hang on a second, we need to slow down and choose the speed of our hamster wheel. Yes, you have to meet the reasonable needs of your patient, but that is now, we take that to be the cumulative, the whole of the reasonable needs of the list of patients. And therefore, actually, safety trumps it all. You need to be working safely. So do have a look at the BMA Safer Working Guidance. Do have a look on our website, which brings a lot of this together. And we've done another fantastic podcast with two GPs who had instigated safer working practices in their practice. And they said it was transformative. And I think a lot of the things that you're describing of, have you got time to make somebody else a cup of tea, or how their day was, then those can come in because you've actually got that bit of room in your day that means that you can stop for that couple of minutes and have that conversation, which is mutually, actually, again, research shows if you talk with other people, then you actually feel a lot better.
Maybe the difference, because I agree totally with what you're saying, Laura, maybe the difference is that being kind doesn't take more time, but you need to feel safe and not like your wheel is going at a million miles an hour in order to be kind. Because when you feel under that amount of pressure, you can't think straight like that, and things like being kind go out the window. So I don't think that that's a problem with kindness not being important. I think it's a problem with our system.
Exactly. So I think that brings us nicely to the end there. I would ask you again, look at Safer Working Guidance, think whether you want to bring that into your practice, and that will allow you to be more generous with your kindness and perhaps make the job more sustainable, so that we're actually there to help more patients with or without health inequalities going forward. So I'd like to say thank you so much to Joe and Katie for joining me today. We do hope that you found that was an interesting discussion to listen to, and perhaps you can come back later in your fellowship and describe to us how your projects move on. We would absolutely love to hear from you a little bit further down the line. So thank you to both of you, and to everyone who's listening. We hope you have a good week, and we hope to have you on another podcast again soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks.
Wessex LMCs, supporting you and your practice.